Good evening. FM88 now brings you a special presentation from today's Founders Day ceremonies held at Wake Forest University. The Founders Day address to be heard in a few minutes was given by former First Lady Betty Ford and is titled Healing the Whole Person. Mrs. Ford's address began a day of events dealing with holistic health. The series concludes this evening with a panel discussion titled Holistic Health, the Interconnectedness of Mind, Body, and Spirit. The panel discussion begins at 8:15 p.m. in room 102 of the Scales Fine Arts Center on the Wake Forest University campus. And now the welcome and address from today's Founders Day convocation at Wake Forest University, President Thomas K. Hearn, Jr. presiding.
Welcome to this celebration of the 152nd anniversary of the founding of Wake Forest University. Today we do honor to our common institutional past and the belief that our best traditions continue to guide us in the present and as we plan for a growing future. I begin my introduction of our speaker today with a short quotation from the prologue to her autobiography. Mrs. Ford wrote, "I am an ordinary woman who was called on stage at an extraordinary time." Now, it would be unseemly of me to dispute the former First Lady of our land, but we must add that these extraordinary times found in her a person more than equal to their challenge. She was born Elizabeth Ann Bloomer in Grand Rapids, Michigan. She became one of America's most loved and charming First Ladies. She has experienced intense personal anguish. When she was down, and when she had climbed the mountain of liberation, she helped America and Americans face openly and fight the problems of chemical dependency. She is a woman of grace and strength. She reminds us of our capacity to heal and to be healed. Her life is remarkably full and active. She is the president of the trustees of the Betty Ford Center at the Eisenhower Medical Complex in California. And she is recognized for her contributions in stimulating public awareness of cancer and for her energetic support of cancer research. She has been an ardent advocate for the rights of women. The National Federation of Press Women has honored her for her contributions to the national understanding of these issues. She is writing another book and consulting with people who will do a film about her life. Betty and Gerald Ford have four children, Susan, Steve, Jack, and Mike, who, as all of you know, is a member of our staff. One of Mrs. Ford's early loves was dancing. She studied with Martha Graham and performed with the Graham Company. Characteristically, during those early days, she formed a dance class for handicapped children. Today, we are honored to encounter this healing and helping voice. Mrs. Ford is recovering from minor foot surgery, which has prevented her marching in the procession. Will you please give Mrs. Ford a warm Wake Forest welcome.
Thank you, President Hearn, for those very kind remarks. It makes me want to really live up to something today. I am delighted, of course, to be in Winston-Salem again. We've been here many times for many reasons when Mike was a student here. But to us, it's a place renowned within the Ford family as the home of Sarah and Becca and Hannah, who might even be here today. It would be the first time I had a grandchild who heard my remarks, and of course, Gail and Mike Ford. But known to everyone else in the world as the home of R.J. Reynolds, and much, much more importantly, of Wake Forest University. I'm flattered and of course very pleased to have been asked to address the Founders Day convocation. I'm flattered because through our family and our family connection with Wake Forest, I know the importance that this day brings within the university committed community. And I'm pleased because the weekend has been given me the made it able for both President Ford and I to have some very precious time with our Wake Forest family. Associate Dean Mike Ford asked me to be here today, but I know there were many others who perhaps were involved in this invitation. And I'm most appreciative of your helping too. Now, over the past few years, perhaps you have been aware that I've been doing quite a bit of public speaking, and I have done a lot of traveling, speaking to all sorts of gatherings in most cases. At this point in the proceedings, I have to be honest with you, I'm really very nervous, and it takes me a while to get into my remarks. But this is usually a healthy sign, and I've sort of come to accept the nervousness as part of any appearance that I make, you know, whether it's been a dance performance in some church parish hall in Grand Rapids way back when, or a state dinner at the White House, sort of way back when, or a talk on alcoholism before a junior lead group, which would have been more recently. But I always carry that healthy supply of butterflies along with me. Today, I decided I could leave those butterflies behind, but I'm not sure I did, because I know that Mike Ford brought his instead. And I just see no reason for both of us to be nervous now, Mike. I suppose your nerves are quite justified. After all, you do work here, and you do live here. And he knows I have a reputation for being outspoken. But Mike, I promise you I'll try not to do anything to embarrass you here today. At least I won't do it intentionally. That really puts your mind at ease, doesn't it? I was asked to speak to you today about the rewarding lessons that are to be learned in the healing of the whole person as a result of personal struggle and crisis. And the crises that I have faced in recent years, the crises that have enabled me to grow and to learn about myself and about others, have been basically health related. I suppose it's possible to face disease, even a potentially fatal disease, and not really learn anything except perhaps the name of your doctor or the number of your room in the hospital. Fortunately for me, my illnesses gave me much more than that. My bouts with cancer and chemical dependency brought a strengthening of my belief in the healing power of unwavering, loving family support, and in the immeasurable value of spiritual program as the basis of lasting family ties, and in my reliance on a higher power. From personal experiences, the experiences that my family and I shared, I know that recovery from a chronic disease requires more than just proper diagnosis and following doctor's orders. It requires the healing of the whole person, the healing of the physical and the emotional and the spiritual being. The medical profession, and I take my hat off to them, is and always has been full of wonderful, caring people, people who provide many answers to many problems. And they try to teach us good health awareness, and they guide us through to recovery. But they cannot do it alone. Occasionally we hear doctors spoke of as godlike, or sometimes they think they are God. But I don't believe this is true of most doctors. Most good, caring, capable doctors have seen far too many unexplained recoveries and reversals and remissions not to recognize that there is some other source of healing. And in addition to all their wonderful medical school skills. Such unexplained occurrences may be ascribed to willpower, self-determination, courage, guts, fighting back, or just plain stubbornness. But to have all these things, there's more you have to have, and that's your faith in a higher power who lets you realize that you're not alone. And it's a power which I choose to call God. No one, victim, family, or friend, enters into the awareness of a disease determined to develop a philosophy in achieving recovery. We're all too scared to think of theory and philosophy. We're all too intent on learning the prognosis and the outcome. And we're all too caught up in the emergency of the disease. When you suffer from a disease, you just want to feel better again. You want to reach a point when the disease is no longer a part of your daily existence. And it's only in looking back, and it's only from a distance, that I was able to see and begin to understand the true spiritual side of my recovery. I've had no experience in faith healing or the laying on of hands that allows the television camera to watch as crutches are cast aside. And if that works, that's wonderful. I certainly could have made use of it this last week. But my beliefs are founded in the quiet, more conservative acceptance of faith that I learned and practiced from the Episcopal Church. And it wouldn't have had to have been the Episcopal Church or really any organized religion. It's a faith that's not based on organization or a building, but rather on a peaceful belief and an understanding in God that allows me to find a serenity of the spirit and the soul. I have a special gratitude for the foundation of this faith that I have been able to build and most importantly, share with my family. This spiritual faith has not been something that I extol loudly. It's not really until today been a topic of public discussion for me. It's been more of a personal matter. It's something that I've always known was there and I could call upon it whenever it was needed. Since my experience with the serious illnesses that I have gone through, my faith is no longer just a periodic function of need, but it's a part of my daily life. You see, these confrontations forced me, or better still, enabled me to let go of the usual demands that my will had placed on my higher power. And instead, I came to accept and rely on the total support that God offered and gave to me so generously. In September of 1974, I thought things were really going along just beautifully. It was exceptionally great in the Ford family. Mike and Gail had just been married in July, and my husband had been sworn in as President of the United States in August. And there we were, living in the White House. Well, it wasn't long after we arrived and I heard the diagnosis of a possible breast cancer. And that diagnosis brought with it a terrible fear, a fear that engulfed not only me, but each member of the family. And I'm sure this must happen to everyone who faces cancer, because the word cancer automatically brings with it the thoughts of death. But being faced with cancer can have a very sobering impact on life. It's a little like having your whole being go into slow motion as you try to grasp the meaning of what is happening to you. It's like suddenly feeling that you're underwater and everything is floating away from you. You try to tell yourself that it must be a dream and that you'll wake up soon. You see, shock can do that to you, a sort of numbness of disbelief, and it all seems so unreal. Deep down, I know I was terrified. But then seeing the total concern in my family's eyes and the tears in our daughter's eyes, I knew that I mustn't panic. And I knew that I had to be strong, because I had to be as strong as possible about what was happening so that I could help my family to help me through an ordeal that we were going to have to share and survive together. And you know, it worked. It was our prayers as a family that made it work. The bonds of family love and reliance have always been deep in the Ford family, and with my cancer, they became stronger. And we were support for each other. As I was being wheeled into surgery early on a Saturday morning, I suddenly had the vivid realization that yes, I did, the test was going to prove that yes, I did in fact have cancer, and that the outcome was that I would have a mastectomy. These are very frightening thoughts, but somehow, almost magically, fear was replaced by wonderful, reassuring tranquility. I knew that everything was going to be all right. Now, at the time, I couldn't have defined what all right would come to include, but someone, something, some protective power was allowing me to turn my fate into stronger hands. And that tranquility came because I was able to accept the fact that I was no longer in control. Now, I don't mean this for this to sound metaphysical or otherworldly, and I did not have an out-of-the-body experience or anything nearly so interesting. But I do know today that that feeling of tranquility was possible because of my beliefs in God, which my family and I accepted and shared together. It's not a weakness, but rather a surrender to a great inner spirit and strength based on faith that allows us the luxury, the comfort of being able to let go and let God. I did have cancer and I did have a mastectomy, and because of the fact that I was the wife of the president, my disease had an impact on thousands of lives. With the announcement of my disease to the media, quite suddenly, breast cancer was no longer an unspeakable disease which women had to suffer from silently and alone. Now it became openly discussed and diagnosed and treated. Women flocked to Mobile clinics. Mammographies became a standard part of a woman's physical examination. Lives were saved. Today, it's 11 and a half years after my mastectomy, and I have had no reoccurrence of cancer. Now I might be able to define just what is meant by all right. It was not quite 4 years later, in fact it was in April of 1978, I had to come to the realization that I was suffering from another disease. I have to be more truthful. You might say I was confronted by a very concerned group of people. It was on April 1st, which we, most everybody knows, is April Fool's Day. And it was my family, every single one of them, including Mike and Gail, that gathered together from all parts of the country to do an intervention. And believe me, it was no April Fool for me. They had come because they were worried about my health and what was happening to us as a family. And with the help of two doctors who were skilled in the technique of intervention, they sat me down in my own living room and expressed their concern about my drinking and prescription drug dependency. How I had become withdrawn from activities and from my friends. They told me that the deep family unity I was so proud of was being dangerously threatened. At the time, I didn't understand exactly what was happening, and I don't think they did either. You might say I wasn't overjoyed with the interruption of my life. But we all knew that something was wrong, and I knew that the intervention was based on their love. So it was with love and concern that they encouraged me to seek treatment and the recovery of my life. Fortunately, I like to think I was wise enough, maybe scared enough, to listen. We all had realized that I was suffering from another disease, and it was the disease of chemical dependency or alcoholism. And it was in reference to chemical dependency that I first heard a disease referred to as physical, emotional, and spiritual sickness. Physically, in very simple terms, the treatment of chemical dependency requires only the abstinence from alcohol and drugs. Granted, in some acute cases, there can be complications such as withdrawal or organ damage. But for the purposes of today's discussion, we don't need to deal with that. Once these drugs, alcohol, chemicals have been eliminated, the dependent person finds himself, or it was in my case, herself, aware of a myriad of newly awakened feelings and emotions. Feelings that have been successfully camouflaged by the effect of the drug being used. Love, fear, loneliness, resentment, inadequacy, anger, and uncertainty have all been buried or shrouded with the fuzz of dependency. You see, before feelings and emotions could be eased and tolerated with a drink or a pill or a tube, and that was the solution to the problem, suddenly, there they are, all surfacing raw and exposed to the light for the first time in years, or maybe for a lifetime. This dependent person, if he or she is to succeed in recovery, now realizes that the principles of abstinence may appear easy, but they are not. He's probably tried many times to quit drinking or using on his own, and he's failed each time. Realizing these repeated failures, he finally has reached out for help. The help one asks for is usually God-given, whether you are aware of it at first or not. It may come through a family member, a friend, a fellow student, a treatment program, your church, or Alcoholics Anonymous. But you must want it to have it happen. Once we realize we want something different out of life, we make that decision. And this is the turning point. This is when we start to face the challenge that life offers. This is all most of us need to begin achieving our goals. A place to start, to begin. It doesn't matter if the goal we set is to be sober, or to beat breast cancer, or to advance in a profession or a job, or maybe do well in a particularly dreaded exam. And the results may not be 100% successful, but as long as we try our best, as long as we learn with each experience, we are growing and we're moving forward. I think that's what life is all about, taking those steps that move us forward. We must become responsible for our actions and for the results of these actions, accepting even the failures as part of the total process of achieving our goals. The crisis in my life could have been viewed as terrible defeats. But it was my trust in the wisdom of my higher power and my spiritual beliefs that gave me the strength to confront the challenges placed in my path and persevere. Life is filled with great risk. And without risk, and without reaching towards something that may be outside our grasp, I'm afraid life would be very dull and very empty. Perhaps God has wisely placed the challenges there, given us something to face, the risk to take, so that we can experience the rewards that life can hold. I've been very fortunate to know some of these rewards, and they have been worth every moment of crisis and struggle to me. Each child is born with a certain capacity for adventure, for risk-taking, and unfortunately for some, part of growing up, becoming a mature adult has forced them to give up some of that adventure in exchange for something called security. For them, having dreams and taking risks is just not responsible. I happen to believe that our higher power doesn't give us dreams or visions that are totally unreachable. We just have to be willing to continue to reach out. Reaching out into the dark unknown can sometimes test our spiritual beliefs. Facing a risk can mean that you fail again and again. But it can also mean that you are determined. And eventually you're going to beat the odds and take that step forward. Even in making mistakes, we learn and we continue on. Last week's space shuttle loss gave us an all too vivid example of risk taking. And that crew of seven did not beat the odds. Knowingly, they faced a potential risk, but they believed in the gains of success far outweighed the risk of failure. As astronaut Christy McAuliffe wrote to her students, reach for the stars. And that's what they were all doing. I doubt that anyone of that crew would advise that our space program be reduced or scuttled. There's still too much to be learned, and there's too much to be achieved, and too much adventure still waiting. Stopping something worthwhile because we're afraid is an admission of that our courage has been shaken, or our faith has diminished just a little bit. But the spirituality, the spiritual wellness that I found in crisis of my life, it didn't come to me overnight, even though I had a strong faith and a firm understanding of my God. It took work to accept that my daily growth was possible only through faith and turning every day over to that power that was much greater and wiser than myself. Cancer and chemical dependencies were crises that I had to accept and live through. It was the only choice, but they were also incredible learning tools. I know today that healing, like all of life, it's not a subjective process, and it's not something that is done to you. It's a process that requires positive, active, devoted participation. And it requires a positive attitude, the will to recover, and the acceptance of the guiding hand of God along with those to know the great joy of life that we can realize. As a young woman, I learned a quotation in school, and I'm not sure what it's from, but I do remember it, and I think that perhaps it's appropriate for me to close my remarks. Man must reach beyond his grasp, else what's heaven for? Thank you.
You've been listening to the address from today's Founders Day convocation at Wake Forest University. The featured speaker was former First Lady Betty Ford, who addressed the topic, Healing the Whole Person. Mrs. Ford's speech began a day of events and presentations dealing with holistic health. The day-long series concludes with a panel discussion titled Holistic Health, The Interconnectedness of Mind, Body, and Spirit. That program begins at 8:15 this evening in Room 102 of the Scales Fine Arts Center on the Wake Forest University campus. This is WFDD-FM, Winston-Salem-Greensboro High Point, the Triad's Arts and Information Station.